Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle. I'll be joined by Slavko Bekovic and Charlie Romeliotis in just a bit as we continue to break down the upcoming NHL draft, June 21st in Vancouver. Of course, the Hawks will pick third overall. We thought, who better to get some knowledge from than Craig Button of TSN. And he joins us now on the Hawks Talk Podcast. All right, Craig, I think everybody would agree that Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko will be the first two players taken in the draft. After those two, is there a large drop-off between them and, say, you know, the rest of the prospects?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, I think Vasily Podkolzin, Trevor Zegras, Alex Turcotte, Bowen Byram, Kirby Dach, Dylan Cousins, Matthew Boldy. I mean, they're all really good players. And so to me, you know, you can talk about a drop-off. I don't see one that's significant, if any at all. And really, I see the cutoff. I think Jack Hughes is superior to every player in this draft. And then after that, I'm not so sure that Podkolzin isn't every bit as good, if not better, than Kakko. We're talking small margins. Bowen Byram is a top pair defenseman that has a chance to be a number one defenseman. You know, so, you know, you start to look at different players and different skill sets. What I would tell you is that it's high end. It's not a draft where, you know, there's a fall off in the high end talent and the high end skill at different positions. And I think that makes it really, really interesting.
Craig, your latest mock draft has the Hawks taking Vasily Podkolzin, the right winger from Russia. Is he ready to play in the NHL next season? And do you get the sense that Podkolzin wants to play in the NHL next year?
I have no idea if he wants to play in the NHL next year. I think that there's no question in my mind that Vasily Podkolzin is 100% committed to playing in the NHL. But, you know, one of the things we got to be careful with is this isn't football. This isn't football where you're drafting a player and he needs to play next year. This is about the draft where you're taking 17-year-old kids, 18-year-old kids, and they're going to have a tremendous amount of physical, mental, and emotional maturity ahead of them. You better pick the players who you think are going to be the best players long-term. And, you know, we see the league becoming younger and we see the league, you know, moving in directions for younger players, but you still got to draft the best players. And if it's just about who can play next year, you're going to miss. You're going to miss on more talented players and significant players that can really help your team long-term. So whether Vasily Podkolzin can play next year, and quite frankly, I don't think he can. I don't think it's in his best interest to. But, you know, and it's very rare for 18-year-old kids to be able to play in the NHL. And I differentiate between playing in the NHL, between thriving and surviving. Good top-end players can survive, but can you thrive? I want players that can thrive and are ready to come in and contribute to my team, not just play.
So let's just play the Podkolzin thing out here. Let's say the Hawks did draft him at three. Might they do what they did with Artemi Panarin, where they invite him to camp, see exactly where he stands with the big club, but have that agreement in place that if things don't work out, you can go back to your KHL team and play there next year versus going to Rockford like they did with Panarin?
Yeah, well, you got to keep in mind, Panarin was older,
yeah,
right? So that there's a difference in maturity and emotional maturity. And I think that when you talk about players, every player is different. What could benefit one player may be not beneficial to another player. So for me, you look at the situation, And you have to include the player in it. There's a transition. You're trying to understand what does he need that will help him develop and become the best player possible. So that's an individual, and I think it has to be tailored. It's not cookie cutter. One player is not the same as another player, and I think you have to look at it and understand, you know, where he's at in the developmental cycle and what he feels, and in the case of Vasily, what the transition is going to look like for him moving to a different league in a different country. So you have to look at that all the way through. But, you know, again, I continuously go back to what type of player are you getting? What type of player is he? And whether it be Vasily Podkolzin or Bohm Byram or Alex Turcotte or Dylan Cousins or whoever it is, you know, what are you trying to get? And what do you think ultimately you want for your team? And then how are you going to help them achieve that? I mean, I think that's at the fundamental core of every team's objective. And if it isn't, then they're leaving themselves vulnerable to falling short.
Craig, if the Blackhawks are looking to bolster the center position within the organization, between these centers, Dylan Cousins, Kirby Dach, and Alex Turcotte, who would you take at number three?
I would take Trevor Zegras.
Oh, okay.
You didn't even mention him. Trevor Zegras reminds me so much of Elias Pettersson at the same age. Now, I'm not suggesting he's going to be Elias Pettersson, but the build, the way he plays the game, the way he makes plays, the way he kind of has this slender build, but he slithers through different openings and everything. I think Trevor Zegras is, after Jack Hughes, the second best center in the draft. I think he's better than Cousins, Dach, and Turcotte.
Are you surprised that the latest round of North American skaters from Central Scouting has Zegras sixth?
You know what? I think that you could make an argument for Turcotte or Cousins or Dach. Like, I don't have a problem with it. Like, what would concern me is if Zegras was 26
okay.
or 17. That would say, wait, what's going on here? He's outside the group. You know, I always look at the group and don't get so worried about the exact number beside them. You know, he's in a grouping of players. Just because I think Zegras is the second best center after Jack Hughes doesn't mean other people share that view. But that's how I feel. But I also could see why somebody would think that Alex Turcotte is the next best after Hughes, or Cousins, or Dach. I could see that argument. So it's about understanding who is in that group. I'll be very straightforward with you. I am not smart enough to tell you that Zegras is better than Turcotte, or Turcotte's better than Dach, or Cousins is better than all of them. All I know is I think they're all really top-end NHL prospects. And now it comes down to, what do you want? You know, I think too much brain power is wasted on who's going to be better, this guy or that guy. You know, they all bring different elements. They all bring different attributes. But again, I think they're all top-end prospects. So figure out what you want. Do you want a big right shot center? Do you want a centerman like Zegras who might be a little bit thinner, a little bit more time for physical maturity? Do you want Alex Turcotte, who's a dog on a bone and a real competitor? They all bring different things, but celebrate what you're getting, know what you want, and then just go and get it.
All right, Craig, with the Hawks taking three defensemen in the first round the last two drafts, you would think they're thinking forward for this draft. But you mentioned him earlier, Bohm Byram. He's the highest-rated D-man prospect. What type of ceiling does he have, and what's the comp you have for Byram?
Well, I'll tell you this. He's the best defenseman in the draft. In my view, he's the best defenseman in the draft. You talk about a gap, I think there is a gap there. Now, we know there's good defensemen there, but when I talk about Bohm, no question in my mind he's a top-pair defenseman, and very well, I probably will project him as a number one. I don't project very many defensemen as clear-cut number ones, and Bohm Byram is clearly moving in that direction. He controls the game in every single regard. Defensively, neutral zone, offense, with the puck, without the puck, skating, shooting. Scott Niedermayer had 26 goals in his draft year. That's how many Bohm Byram had. I am not suggesting he is Scott Niedermayer, but his ability to command the game in so many different ways and to play big minutes effortlessly because his skating is so good and his mind is so free and he's so smart and so attuned to what's going on. And a big-time competitor, you know, Bohm Byram to me, could fit the needs of any, and I don't know where you find number one defensemen. I don't know where you find them. And, you know, we can talk about drafting defensemen and using their picks on the defensemen. I mean, I don't think any of the guys they drafted are number one defensemen. Bowen Byram could be a number, like, to me, I guess I gotta take a stand here. I think he can be a number one defenseman.
And how quickly do you think he could play in the NHL? It's like, not next year, but the following year, or?
I think that's a realistic expectation for him. And, you know, what you got to be careful with, and the Detroit Red Wings went through this, you can't just integrate a whole bunch of young defensemen in your lineup at one time. And so you can be happy about them, you can be excited about them, but you have to make sure that you're not overwhelming them, because too many of them, you know, not only put your team and themselves into kind of a greater challenge, it also puts your coach, because he wants to make sure that he doesn't overwhelm them, and he wants to make sure that he can get them into situations that they can handle. When you have too many young defensemen, they're going to get overwhelmed and you're going to run into problems. So I think that it's the time frame for Bowen is September 2020, and I think that that's where he would have a real opportunity to come in and again, I'm going to use the word, and contribute and thrive, not just survive.
You've made your point clear that you should be entering this draft with a big picture thought, not just looking for the immediate payoff. Hughes and Kako look to be NHL ready. We'll see indeed if that's the case. After those two, who do you think is the most ready NHL player of the prospects?
Yeah, it really is a good question, because, you know, as I go through it, and like you go through it in your head, and you start to think about, you know, whether it be Podkolzin or Doc or Cousins or Boldy or Zegras or Broberg or Byram. And really, I cannot come to any other player that I think is ready to come in and contribute to your team, like Jack Hughes, like Kaapo Kakko. And Podkolzin, because he's so exceptionally smart, might be the closest guy, but I don't see anybody else, you know, from that top group being able to come in and be able to contribute to your team.
And you don't think there's any chance Jersey or the Rangers would consider trading their pick with the Hawks? And if so, what would it take to switch picks?
I can only tell you this, guys. If you want to go back and look at the history of number one picks being traded, like, and I'm talking like in this century, in the last 25 years, Rick Dudley's the only guy that's been part of it. So unless Rick Dudley shows up with the New York Rangers or the New Jersey Devils, I don't expect it to happen. Everybody talks about it. Everybody does. I hear it all the time. It just doesn't happen. So I think the chances are just about nil, if not nil.
All right, last one for you. We're not going to get to see Hughes face Kakko in the under-18 World Championships, because Kakko has been named to Finland's senior team. He's going to be playing in the World Championships. If Kaapo plays well in Slovakia, and let's say Hughes doesn't have a great tournament, could you see a scenario where Kakko becomes the first player selected in the draft?
Listen, I'm not going to say that it's not a scenario that couldn't happen, but if you're going in to scout a player and a guy played good and a guy didn't play good, and that's how you're evaluating players, you are going to make a lot of mistakes. The bottom line is, this is a long process of evaluating players. I'll say it again, and I'll say that I don't see any player better than Jack Hughes. I think Jack Hughes is superior in his skating, his hands, his mind, his competitiveness. There's other good competitors. But in those three skill areas, okay, I don't see any. He's superior to everybody. So go ahead. Jack Hughes has a bad game or a tournament or a tackle, doesn't change my view, because it doesn't mean that Kakko skates better or Podkolzin has better hands or Kirby Dock or Zegras have a better head. They're not, to me, superior to everybody. And there's nobody that's a better competitor. They're good competitors, and Jack is a great competitor, and so is Podkolzin and Kakko. They're right there. But in terms of the skill areas and the mind and the creativity, he's superior. So go ahead. Go ahead and go and judge a game or a tournament based on one thing. You'll make big mistakes.
Craig, great stuff. Thank you very much for joining us. Hopefully we can chat one more time before we get closer to that June 21st draft?
It would be my pleasure.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
Back on the Hawks Talk podcast with Charlie Romaliotis, Slavko Bekovic. I am Pat Boyle. All right, we heard from Craig Button. A lot to digest there. Let's start, Charlie, with your biggest takeaway from what Button had to say.
Well, he's very convinced that Jack Hughes is going to go first overall. And then after that, it's likely going to be Kaapo Kakko. And the third spot is obviously where it gets interesting, because last year at the NHL draft is where things got interesting as well. And I think it's different this year, where the Blackhawks have such a large pool of players to choose from. And NHL Central Scouting released their rankings today. And you could go from, even Craig said it in there, from 3 to 9. Like, it's probably just, they're all bunched up. There's not really a separation from the third guy to maybe like the 7th or 8th guy. And I think it's telling that the Blackhawks can really go in any different direction here. But my biggest takeaway is a lot of the mock drafts have the Blackhawks taking Vasily Podkolzin, and their reports,
including Craig's,
yeah, absolutely. And I think his contractual situation is dicey in the KHL, but Craig, he didn't necessarily believe that Podkolzin can play in the NHL as soon as next season. But I'm pretty sure there might not be a concern of him actually playing in the NHL next year if he wanted to get out of that KHL contract. So it'll be interesting to see. I think I'm just more curious about what direction the Blackhawks are going to go in, because they've always been a team that wants to value the best available player, not necessarily the top need. And my favorite thing that Craig said in there is, if you're going to take a player based on whether he's ready next season or whatever, you're going to make a terrible mistake.
It's a short-sighted move.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I agree with that.
I'm with you. I think last year, if you would have told me before the draft that Adam Boqvist would be their pick, I would have been pretty surprised, because I was surprised when they made the pick at number 8. So I don't want to have that same situation where I'm sitting there going, wow, I can't believe they made that pick. So they're going to approach this, I would assume, just like they did last year, with, we're going with the guy that we think is going to be the best player after whoever the top two are, whether that's Hughes and Kakko, I think we all agree. Number 3, it's going to be the guy they think down the road is going to be the best NHL player. If that's Podkolzin, great. Then you're expecting a guy with great stick handling, a guy who can be a great scorer in the NHL one day, whether or not he's ready to contribute. And I think that's something that Craig made very, very clear, is that these guys might be able to come in next year and play in the NHL. He said survive. But thrive and contribute is a totally different story. And I think for the Hawks right now, you look at this as a gift, saying, all right, wow, we got this number 3 pick. We're going to get this asset that's going to come right in and contribute to our team, because we want to compete and be a contender again next year. Maybe that's not realistic with this draft class. I mean, you look at last year's class, Dahlin, Svechnikov, Tkachuk, Kotkaniemi all played 70 games or more in the NHL. After that, I think only 2 or 3 guys played in the NHL in the first round. So is this draft as good as last year's draft? Are we going to see the same group off the top go right into the NHL, play, and contribute? And I think that's what remains to be seen. And it doesn't sound like Craig is sold on anybody after the top two being ready to come in and thrive right away.
My biggest takeaway from Craig Button was, well, his love for Bowen Byram. Yeah. Says he is a number one, and he doesn't usually give out number one labels to prospects. And then on the flip side, a little backhand compliment, slight to the Blackhawks, that of the young Boqvist, Bodans, Ian Mitchells, they don't have a number one, or Joki Haru,
yeah,
in that bunch, which that was quite an indictment, I would say. And I think we would all agree that you would think they're looking forward. But if Byram is as good as Button says, and he is a bona fide number one, and you don't have a number one out of those groups, and clearly defense is a need, does that change your mind a little bit of how you might look at this draft, even though he seems to be the lone D-man,
right,
that you would even consider with a top 10 pick?
Yeah, I consider it only because last season I didn't think they were going to take a defenseman at number eight, I think that the consensus was Oliver Wahlstrom is going to be there, and he could possibly jump into the lineup right away. And then they ended up taking Adam Boqvist. So if the Blackhawks are convinced that this guy can be a number one defenseman and he can either jump into the lineup right away. He's 17 years old. He turns 18, I think, a week or two before the draft. So he's still young, just like Adam Boqvist was when he got drafted by the Blackhawks. If the Blackhawks feel that this is the best available player and they could be getting a franchise-changing defenseman, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because we've all talked about the defenseman in the pipeline, and it doesn't matter how many defensemen you have. If none of them pan out the way you think they're going to pan out, then it's irrelevant.
But
you know,
but don't you have to? Let's say there's a consensus that they want Byram, okay, and that they agree with Button that he's a number one. And let's say they agree that their top prospects, their top D prospects, nobody is projected to be at one. Okay, let's just go with that premise. Don't you have to at least take from that group of four and try to sell that off? Like he said, don't make the mistake that the Red Wings did. Don't try to bring a bunch of young defensemen up together. It doesn't usually work out.
But I think it would be more valuable for the Blackhawks to do it, develop the players that they want to develop and see what the trajectory is, and then maybe sell off like, hey, this guy is having an unreal season over here. Because you look at all the, like, go look at the Edmonton Oilers. How many times have they gotten the number one overall pick and they've screwed it up? Not because they picked the wrong player, but the environment they were putting the players in was not healthy.
Yeah.
So the Blackhawks have a very healthy environment. They can develop the players at their own pace. And, like, a name is just a name when they're a prospect. Like, nobody knows what they're truly going to turn into in the NHL. So if the Blackhawks feel comfortable developing all the defensemen that they have in their system the way they want to, then they might be more valuable as trade assets down the road, knowing that, hey, we did everything we could to help this guy's development.
I don't think we're even having this conversation if Byram was a righty shot. I don't think they even consider it. But because he's a lefty and because he's got that number one potential defenseman label, that might not be from all scouts, but it's also kind of hard to compare, because he is the lone defenseman in a big group of forwards that are at the top of this draft class. So how do you compare his ceiling compared to an Alex Turcotte or some of these other guys who are in that 3-12 range or whatever it might be? And it was funny, as Craig was kind of going on and on about how much he loves Bowen Byram, I'm looking at you, Pat, and I'm like, I think he's selling PB on Bowen Byram right now. Like, let's get this guy in here.
Look, I mean, defense is obviously the top priority for this team this offseason. But we're dealing in the reality of whoever you select in late June is not going to be a part of the NHL. I wrestle with this. The meter's running on Kane and Taves.
Yep.
I'm tired of not being a part of the playoffs and big picture. That's what I wrestle with. I get big picture. You need to be sustainable. But you also have two Hall of Famers, again, who are 30, and the clock is ticking rather fast. So that's kind of the tug of war that I get when someone suggests. And I guess the other thing is, I felt like the thought process was to take as many D-men as they could, okay? And it was a conscious decision over the last couple years, and hope that one or two hit. Like, you take four or five, but you realize that probably only one or two are going to hit. And I think that was their mentality. I don't know if you can keep that train of thought going with a pick for Byram once, you know, and keep this stockpiling these and just hoping one of them hits. Meanwhile, your depth at forward remains suspect.
Yeah, and that's the tricky situation, because you want – ideally, you would like a guy. I mean, we said it even last year. You would like a guy that could jump in right away. Number eight is probably not the pick where usually it's the top three and then there's the drop off. But listen, if Craig was very convincing that this guy has a number one ceiling, he even threw out the Scott Niedermeyer comparison statistically. And the thing that stuck out to me is how effective this guy is at in all zones, offensive, neutral, defensive. And that's exactly the kind of player that NHL teams aspire to have. You look at the playoffs right now, Tampa Bay Lightning, Victor Hedman, Calgary has Mark Giordano, Boston, Zdeno Chara, and Charlie McAvoy. They have a number one defenseman. All these elite teams have a number one defenseman.
Yeah.
Cornerstones. And Duncan Keith is 35, and he used to be that. You know, he still has a lot of hockey left in him, a lot of high-quality hockey left in him, but I just don't think you can bank on him going forward as the number one guy handling 30 minutes. And look at San Jose. I mean, they got two number one defensemen in Burns and Carlson. That's today's NHL. You need puck movers, and you need franchise cornerstone players on defense.
I don't want to love it. We're spending a lot
of time on someone we didn't think we'd.
Yeah, no, I know. That was like, we're not going to talk defensemen. It's like, all right, we're talking defensemen. One thing I think we all can agree on, they need depth at center. So when I pitched him, you know, who would you take at three between Cousins, Doc, or Turcotte, he goes, none of the three. I'll take Zegras for 300, Alex. And, you know, your thoughts, you've heard some talk about what type of player Trevor Zegras is, and what have you heard, Charlie?
Yeah, it's a really exciting player. He's a skater. Like Craig said, the NHL Central Scouting released their rankings, and, you know, you obviously mentioned the top three centers that they have on there in North American, and then Zegras is right there at number six. And, I mean, it's just, I don't think it's necessarily a knock on those other three guys. I just think that's how tight the draft is. So if Zegras is the guy the Blackhawks feel is the best option, number three, they'll take Zegras. I don't think the Blackhawks are afraid to go off the board here.
Yeah.
Like, I think they went off the board last year. And, you know, still time will tell on whether Bokus is that bona fide player that they think he is. But, like, if they think Matthew Boldy at nine is the best player, like, they'll take him at number three. And they won't look back.
Well, I mean, one thing is picking 8-9 in the 20s like they have in years past and picking third. I mean, this is a game changer. This is a gift.
You've got to hit on this.
You got to hit on this. I mean, and it's funny, you know, you look at, you know, the top five players taken in the last five drafts. They're almost all hits. Almost all of them. One that you might say you're a little leery on would be Strom, and I think he's shown signs of being a hit. You know, I guess your definition of hit is subjective. But
and that's what I'm saying. It goes back to me saying that healthy environment. Like, maybe Strom couldn't have been the guy in Arizona because,
that's a great point.
You know, he wasn't put in the best situations or what have you. Now he's in Chicago and he's playing, I don't even want to say a secondary role, but he's like in the shadow of Kane and Taves. You know, like, he doesn't have to be the franchise guy. And that's why it's important that's why it's a game changer for the Blackhawks, because this can be, this guy doesn't have to change life for the Blackhawks. He can kind of just, you know, kind of just
there's really not a lot of pressure for whoever it is at number three to come in and be the face of the franchise. There's none, because what better team to learn from and become a pro in the NHL than this Blackhawks team with Kane and Taves, who are both number one and number three picks. They know what it's like, and they did it a decade ago where the team was not in great shape as a franchise, and they had to do it, and they hit. Now, you know, this player can come in at number three and learn from those guys. And he can take from a Dylan Strome, who, you know, he struggled as a top five pick and then came to Chicago and was able to excel. Or maybe he's an undersized guy. Well, you know what? Alex DeBrincat was an undersized guy. And look what he's done in the NHL. Pretty much any way you look at it, whoever they get from this number three pick, they've got somebody that can be a really good mentor for them on the Hawks roster right now.
Couple other things to take away from the conversation with Craig Button. Like we expect and can almost guarantee, New Jersey and the Rangers are not moving from the number one or number two slot. I did pose the question, you know, what would it take? And, you know, he just basically said, I don't think it's going to happen.
Forget about it.
Even though he was all in on Kako and all in on Hughes.
Yeah, and he even flirted with the idea that Podkolzin isn't that far off from,
because I've heard that it could be considered a big three, not just a top two.
Right. So I think Podkolzin is really the favorite for the Blackhawks at number three, and that's the interesting part for me, because we've spent so much time talking about a defenseman and the centers, and it might be a winger that they take, you know. So that might not be the worst thing, you know. They could find a guy that could play with Patrick Kane, or they could play it with Jonathan, whoever. So like we said, it's a game changer. They can go anywhere.
Yeah, and I think it works in the Hawks' favor if Podkolzin is somewhat unsure of wanting to be in the NHL next year, whatever. I think it does help that the Artemi Panarin experience went well. Now, Craig made a great point. He came over at like 23.
Yep.
So he's not coming over as a teenager. But he also realizes that he played with Patrick Kane, became Rookie of the Year, and has set himself up for a huge payday.
And those guys had a great relationship.
Yeah, and if you recall, you remember how Stan set that whole thing up. I, you know, brought a player in just to be the interpreter that year, and then and gave him
poor like, Victor Tikhonov.
Yeah, Tikhonov, and set up. Basically a safety net, like, hey, if you don't make the team, you can go back to the KHL next year, and then we'll try this again the following year. You don't need to go to Rockford. So it would be I think it works in the Hawks' favor if they do go with Podkolzin, that they've had a positive experience. And I'm sure Artem Anisimov would, if he, you know, he's not going to be moved by then, but I think he would have some positive things to say, at least before July 1st.
Yeah. Absolutely. He'll be the translator up until July 1st, and then we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, no, I agree. And I think the key to a lot of these players, too, is the Blackhawks like, I mean, we even saw it with the Dylan Strome and Nick Schmaltz trade is – Dylan Strome just lives and breathes hockey. He's a competitor, and not to say that Nick Schmaltz isn't, but they want guys that will compete. They watch hockey. They will find ways to get better, and I think Podkolzin kind of fits that mold.
Everything that we've heard about him is that he's kind of the perfect blend of incredible skill and also hockey IQ. He lives and breathes the game, smart guy. I think it was actually Craig that compared him as far as stick handling to Pavel Datsyuk. It doesn't get much better than that. Yeah, when you're talking about handles.
I think it was a very astute comment to say, if you're going to judge Kako and Hughes, I wouldn't say strictly, but putting heavy emphasis on Hughes in the under 18 and Kako playing in the World Championships in Slovakia, that you're not going to have a very long shelf life as a general manager or scout in the National Hockey League. I did think, though, with Kako playing the step up in class, that it gives you at least it gives you run of him playing against, I would say, elite players, but certainly better than what Hughes is going to face in the under 18.
Yeah, and I love what Craig, he brought up such a great point, because after the World Juniors, it just seems like the conversation shifted after Kako scored the game winner in the gold medal game, and he had such a great tournament or whatever, and Jack Hughes was injured for a couple of games and didn't make as big of a you know, it wasn't a splashy tournament for him, but I still think Jack Hughes is absolutely the consensus number one, and the fact that he plays center too is such a game changer. And even you look at like the lottery on the lottery show, like he was so composed, like as a 17 or 18 year old, like, and his brother Quinn is just he's so good. Like, you can just see the confidence that family breeds. Like, it seems like, even when I watch the World Juniors, like Jack Hughes was like demanding the puck, like he was flying through the neutrals, like, I have no doubts that he can become like an elite player in the NHL.
Yeah, there's a reason that he's been hyped for this long, and there's a reason that it's probably going to be him that goes off the board number one. There's a reason why at the draft lottery he was the only guy there, and they were interviewing Jack Hughes every 14 minutes.
Yeah, I
think everyone just kind of agrees he is going to be that good.
You've done a lot of film work, both of you guys. Has anybody jumped off the screen when you've been kind of looking over these prospects, whether it's because of need or just he looks head and shoulders above the talent he's on the ice with?
I love watching Dylan Cousins because of his speed. And I watched an interview where they basically had Kirby Doc and Dylan Cousins discussing their own game. And Doc was like, you know, I've gotten the Getzlaf comparison, which makes a lot of sense. Bigger guy, kind of a cerebral player, great playmaker, good passer. Where Dylan Cousins goes, I love watching Matthew Barzal play. And in my head, I'm like, oh, boy, would I love to have a guy like that on the Blackhawks right now. He is just – he does it with speed, and he's tenacious. Skating, he's so smooth on the ice. They're totally different styles of players, but it's funny that, you know, when you look at the centers and you include Zegras and Turcotte in here, they're so neck and neck, and they're totally different. So do you want a Jeff Carter or do you want a Ryan Getzlaff? You know, what's the comparison? What are you trying to slide into this lineup? I just think to have Taves, Cousins, Strome up the middle, and you can even say Kampf as your fourth line center, it's pretty damn good.
I feel like Dylan Cousins is the guy that he has like a little bit of old school in him, where he's that big center, can play a shutdown type game, but also he's speedy. He can
has
play
some physicality,
you know,
to
like
him
he,
too.
He's, I think he fits the kind of mold. And he's 6'2", 180. I mean, that's a guy that his frame is like already NHL worthy. So I think he's one of the guys that jumped out of the page to me, especially when you read into how competitive he is.
The one thing that, you know, I guess would say caused a little concern is when, you know, Craig was all in on Zegras, and then you realize he's 6 foot and 169. Like, you know, we've got the market cornered on small forwards. I know that, you know, Turcotte is obviously the smallest of that bunch at you know, under 6 foot and 185 pounds. But, look, you got to take whatever player you think has the highest ceiling and has the skills to, you know, I would say if they can't become elite, at least be knocking on the door to all-star status.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether the trajectory lines up with the Blackhawks' timeline of trying to maximize the Kane and Taze prime careers after they just came off career offensive years, that's the tricky part about all this. You want to have it both ways. You want the most elite player, and you want him to be hopefully as ready as next season. But it might not happen like that. But if you're getting a franchise guy that can change the direction of the franchise, or at least speed up the process, I mean, this is a huge bonus from where we thought Chicago would be a week ago when they thought maybe they'd be picking at 12.
I think it's going to tell us a lot about where Stan and the Blackhawks feel about this franchise with whatever name that they pick at number three. If it is Bowen Byram, then, okay, maybe we're not as sold as we thought we were on some of these defensemen. Or it's just that they think he's that good. If it's Podkolzin, okay, he's the best player available, and we think he's going to help us out as soon as possible. So I'm very intrigued because there is such a big group of players that they could be considering. I mean, any of like a dozen guys, I don't think any of us would be surprised if that's the pick.
One bit of news that came out on Monday, and we expected this: Patrick Kane named captain for Team USA for the World Championships in Slovakia. That will take place next month, May 10th through the 26th. We expect Alex DeBrincat to be a part of that team as well. Artem Anisimov to play for Russia. The rosters for, you know, the remaining players that we'll find out will be released later this week. No surprise that Kane is going to take this opportunity. We've always said the one guy that is a rink rat, wants to be a part of it, doesn't pass up an opportunity to play hockey, and it probably pains him that he's watching, once again, the Stanley Cup playoffs from his couch.
Yeah, and he was one of the guys that was probably very disappointed that Team USA couldn't compete in the Olympics, because they would have fielded by far the best USA team with Matthews and Eichel and Dylan Larkin and all Johnny Gaudreau, all these guys. So Patrick Kane never passes up an opportunity to represent Team USA. He always talks about how cool it would be for him to help USA win at the Worlds or win an Olympic gold medal, because they haven't won at the Worlds yet. So for him to be captain and have that international success to go along with the success he's had in the NHL would be cementing his legacy as a hockey player in all areas.
It sends such a great message for a guy like that too. There's no need for him to go. He's not having to prove anything, but he wants to represent the United States. He wants to win badly, and he knows that it's great to stay in shape. You're playing against really, really good players. There's really no downside to it.
What's your gut tell you, Brandon Saad? He was invited. You think he'll take that invitation?
I don't think he is, just because I know he plays such a different style than Kane and DeBrincat. He likes to take the summers off to recharge his body and mentally, and I don't think I wouldn't expect him to play.
Yeah, but I'm with you on that.
They'll probably announce the preliminary rosters in a couple days, and I'll be wrong, so we'll see.
We'll find out what happens. Of course, we'll get into, you know, free agency later on here in the off season, and we'll continue to break down the draft prospects as well. How's your Tampa Bay Lightning pick looking, boys?
Oh, man. All of my picks aren't looking great.
Had been questionable for game four, too.
That's a – yeah. I'm kind of surprised at not the fact that they are down in the series, but the way they have been – like, they don't look like themselves at all. Like, it's a complete 180.
And it's so funny. I was saying to Slavko, they were up 3-love in game one. Yeah. And it looked like, okay, the route – It was 3-0 in the first.
Yeah, I mean, I have a group chat with my friends, and as soon as it was 3-0, we're curtains. Like, yeah, that's it.
You thought Tortorella's going to make a goalie change. You thought, right? I mean,
and how Sergei Bobrovsky? It was looking like if the first period was indicative of how the first round was going to go.
The dollar signs are just my eyeballs right now.
And now he is completely changed. Now it's like, oh man, he's really upping his market.
All right, let me throw this one at you. Let's say Columbus makes a deep run. Does that change Bobrovsky and Panarin's game plan, or, I mean, do...
It's still Columbus, Ohio.
No, I don't think it changes Panarin, Bobrovsky. I do think it could sway Matt Duchene, Ryan DeZingle to stay. Because those would be the guys that if Panarin and Bobrovsky leaves, those guys are getting the money and they're getting the number one top line minutes after that.
So. All right, more on the Stanley Cup playoffs on a later Hawks Talk podcast. Thanks to Charlie and Slavko, as always. Our thanks to TSN's Craig Button, who broke down the draft prospects and how things look at the top end of the draft and who the Blackhawks might be considering. That's a wrap for this edition of the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie and Slavko, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, as always.